anything? Okay. We had to make an adjustment. We're having our annual business meeting March, the second Sunday, which was going to also be the Lord's table, but we can't work it all in. So long story short, we're going back to the even months for the Lord's table. So we'll skip a month here. I hope nobody gets divine discipline over it, including me, because I'm the leader. No, but we're gonna go back to that schedule. So we won't be doing it in March, the Lord's table. Right? Okay. I didn't follow that up. Okay. Just stay tuned. We'll figure it out. All right. We are looking at this. Believers are to be obedient to the authorities established by divine institution number 4. And this has presented some special challenges to believers down through time, because the establishment chain of command cannot ask you to involve yourself in denial of your faith and your Christian way of life. And they can't. I mean, they can, but you don't have to abide by it. They're imposition of any kind of persecution that might occur. Fortunately, we live in the Bible Belt. And so there's less of this, as far as I know, than if you were in some other places possibly in the country. And with the way things are going historically, the dark side is cranked up against the righteous of all categories. All categories. The rebellion against the laws of divine establishment, morality, grief. Morality. You know what the word is, don't you? There's things that are moral and there are things that are immoral. They've always been immoral in any kind of viable civilizations. And if the rulers don't want to uphold this, then it's on their head. They will answer. And of course, this country is going to answer like no other country has ever answered in all of its history. But yes, other nations have become extinct. There's a psalm that says, at his hand, nations have become extinct. You know, like an extinct species you hear about from time to time, supposedly. Then one shows up. But anyway, we just soldier on. Have a low profile. We're not out in the streets protesting abortion. We're not out in the streets protesting this and that. We individually are witnesses. And if anyone asks us, we're not here to straighten out people. They're running around doing this stuff. That doesn't work. But if they ask you, they probably won't. But if anyone asks you, I had a phone call. Some student from SNU over here. I guess he was doing a paper or something. Wanted to know, is the word homosexual in the Bible? You know, it's like, what's wrong with you? Yes, I said, okay. You can get either a New Testament dictionary, lexicon, and look it up, or you can go to the classical Greek lexicon. It's the same word, and the Greeks and the ancients and all these people, they knew what this activity was. They had a name for it. They had a name for it. And so just look it up. And it's mentioned in Corinthians. Paul gives a laundry list of different activities that people, he says, such were some of you before your conversion. You were involved in. There were con men, homosexuals, and I forgot what the others were. But you can read it in Romans. Such were some of you. And it's not just in Leviticus. That'd be enough. But all manner of immorality outside the divine institution, from what I call normal perversion, that's male, female, unmarried, to abnormal perversion, same-sex stuff, and all the other letters of the rainbow crowd. What country, what city, Oklahoma City, allows them to have a parade? I saw a guy on there. It was a black guy. He was talking. He says, "Have you seen one of these parades and what goes on in them?" He said, "It is unbelievably disgusting." And so you go get a permit and you can go out, right out on the street and do that in broad daylight. I think, I don't know if it's the last time, but one of the times we visited the church up on Long Island, we went downtown New York City on a Sunday. That's when the place is vacated, all intents and purposes. It's not like on the rest of the week. And they had one going on. The tail end of it passed by us just as we were on a school bus, because this guy in the church had a, he picked up children and took them home and to school for these exclusive private schools out on Long Island. And he took us downtown to see some of the sites, Ellis Island and all that usual stuff. But you promote this stuff openly. You flaunt this stuff. It's going to be they do it in Israel. They allow the parades in Israel. You know, that doesn't mean all the Jews agree with it. There's some that adamantly do not. But it's the top authorities that allow this, and this has brought the destruction of civilizations. That and other things has led to the destruction of civilizations. The Bible's filled with examples of the decay and rot, moral rot, as well as other things besides the sex side of things. So these other things as well, leading to the destruction of civilizations. God pulls the plug on them. We have verses. God raises up nations. He puts nations down. He did it to Israel 1, 2, 3 times. Northern kingdom, southern kingdom, and then the kingdom or the nation that was in the place when Jesus showed up. They got booted out of there. But it wasn't for that. The Old Testament, it was always for all the vices associated with the sex cult, the mother-son cult, Baal cult, the Baals, the female goddesses, all this mess where they got involved in this. And finally, they wouldn't listen to their prophets and repent and turn back and clean up their act. And God sent some pagans in there to drag him off into captivity. Explains why the Jews are scattered all over the face of the earth. Scattered to the four winds, putting all these nations. Because they misbehaved. This was threatened under their law. You don't line up in the land. It's still the promised land. It's still promised to the true descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But if you don't behave in that, I will evict you. And I will kick you out there. You like the Gentile stuff so much, I'll put you out there in the middle of them. Until you decide to get your act together. So, God judges nations. Our founding fathers, some of them at least, understood that there was an unseen hand that was over and guiding the nations. You never hear of that anymore. I don't. I don't hear anything about it. There ought to be fear in these people that rule on the local level, up the ladder. There ought to be fear of God. And in these last days, but there's going to be no turning around to the United States. If theoretically it is there, we could, but it isn't going to happen. It's not going to happen because the prophecy says it isn't going to happen. The die is cast. We're just on for the final ride. And it is, and that part of it isn't any fun. It isn't any fun. I try to isolate myself from it. Don't always do a good job of it. So, civil disobedience is only for extreme cases. We have to try to live at peace at all possible. There's onerous laws. Does any other country have as onerous an income tax code than this country? Maybe they do. I mean, and you're supposed to follow and figure this whole thing out? And they saddle this on the American people? A free people? I'm not advocating anybody rebel against them. I'm just saying this is onerous. This is onerous when it's subject to all these interpretations and it's all so convoluted. It shouldn't be that way. But we're beyond repair. Know this. Don't get too worked up about it because there's nothing can do about it. It's where it's at. Anyway, back to Daniel 3. We had the event where when they got the three young fellows out of the fiery furnace, where Nebuchadnezzar got close enough to be able to see that there was, God permitted it, he didn't die, got close enough to see that of the three men, there are three, I'm going to call them, you know, they may have been 20, I don't know, they're real young guys. They're not children, but they're, and he sees that there's a fourth person in there, and they're walking around talking to each other like they were having a stroll in the park. And this furnace is just as hot as it ever was. So Nebuchadnezzar, he really went through a roller coaster on this thing. Now he gets humbled. This monarch, he gets humbled. He knew that they worshipped a different god. But you know, when you're Nebuchadnezzar in the beginning here, and you're over this great kingdom, and this is true of all these other kingdoms, our gods are better than your gods because we're ruling over everything right now. And we defeated your army, so that means our gods are better than your gods. That was the stupid stuff they pushed around. So Nebuchadnezzar is thinking, the gods of the Jews must not be so good, or God of the Jews must not be so good, because he couldn't keep them in the land, and I kicked them out. Nebuchadnezzar was the one that went in there and brought him into captivity. That's why Daniel was there. He didn't come in the final go-around. He was an earlier... See, what they would do was, they'd go there and say, you're going to do this and this and this, and we're going to take some of your most promising, attractive young people, and we're going to put them in our court, our royal court. Because we don't put ugly people in our royal court. We typically put, you know, the ones that look good and are smart. And we'll dress them up, and we'll train them, and they'll serve in our court. And they had them from other nations. So Daniel and his three friends, they were taken away from their country against their will. Brought all the way into the land of Babylon and Iraq. You know what they decided? Young people. I got any left? Young people. They decided, I'm in this environment, but I am going to serve God. The first test they got was the food test. They're Jews in the age of Israel, and you can't eat pork and a bunch of other stuff. And they have this big buffet thing or whatever it is where they go eat, and they had to tell their supervisor, "We cannot eat. We cannot eat from the king's table because these things are against the law of Moses for the Jew, the dietary code, which we're not under, by the way." So, I eat a piece of sausage every day. We're not under the dietary code, but they were. They didn't say, "Oh, we're in Babylon, it's off, we don't have to do that anymore." So the guy made a deal with him. Here are the vegetables you can eat. And we'll try this for a forgotten amount of time, a few weeks, a month, I don't know. It's in Daniel. We will let you do this because this diet that all these are on is supposed to make you look real healthy. It's not a bunch of junk food, just sweets and whatever. We want you to your skin and everything, and we want you looking good. So after the period of trial was over, their supervisor came and looked at Daniel and his three friends, and their countenances, their face, their skin, it was better than the rest of them. I wonder how that happened. Was it just diet, or was it divine intervention? Both. They determined, we're going to serve God in Babylon. You know what most kids would do their age? They just throw themselves into it. You know, I want to be like the rest of these dummies. I want to act like them, think like them, and get ahead. I got to do what I got to do. Rather than the mentality, God's with me, I'm going to just go with the flow, this is where He wants me. You can change my name to a Babylonian sounding name. But that's fine. You can call me Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego all you want. That's not the name my parents gave me. You can read it in Daniel. That's just a name change. They don't care. So it glorifies something within the Babylonian system. I don't care. It's not idolatry. I just got a different name. They're trying to suppress my identity. But I am not ashamed of who I am. Or where I'm from, because I have doctrine in the soul and I know why the Jews got kicked out of Israel. I know why. But I know it's not a permanent situation. They're going to go back. It was exactly 70 years from the exodus, from kicking them out until they returned. And Daniel lived through two kingdoms. Not through the Persian one, but on into it. And he was a high official in all of them. He was promoted clear up the ladder over all these other people because he interpreted this image. Well, there were some real jealous people. But you couldn't touch Daniel. He didn't have to worship fall down and worship the thing. He got a pass. But not his three friends. So they get thrown into the fiery furnace after they say, "Look, we serve our God. We serve our God. And He's able to deliver us. If it is His will, He will deliver us. If not, we're still going to serve Him. We die in that furnace, we die in that furnace. But we're going to go down knowing that we did not deny God and commit an act of idolatry." Just even though it was a one-time shot, and most people, "Oh, just once, I don't believe it." We don't care whether you believe it, just fall down and worship this thing. Just go through the genuflex. You don't have to believe it up here. No. No, thank you. Not doing that. That's an attack on God, the Most High God. So Nebuchadnezzar gets this big lesson. See, he's good at what he did. He rose to the top. And built us, and under God, of course, he took all the credit, but until later. He took all the credit until later he finally realized, no, a God of heaven, the God of Daniel, He's the one that gave me this kingdom. That's quite a transition from a pagan worshiping the particular deities of their time. That is a major shift in the soul of this man who was so arrogant, so successful. And he gets humbled. God knows how to humble people. Know that. And there's some people that really need to be humbled. Some for their good. Most, it doesn't do any good. But he will humble the arrogant. And he humbles Nebuchadnezzar because God knows ahead that Nebuchadnezzar is going to become a convert. The last guy on earth you would have picked. And Daniel wasn't on his case every day. Daniel wasn't like some fundy who is constantly pigeonholing him and telling him he's a pagan. We know you're a pagan. We don't have to tell you nothing. We'll let God work on you and in your life. And he does it with this Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego thing. And so they brought him out of that furnace. They came out of the furnace, the three of them. Went in, there were four. Nebuchadnezzar got to see it with his own eyes. The fourth entity. The fourth entity was the one we've studied in the Old Testament who appeared to Abraham in his tent on that hot summer day, that wrestled with Jacob on the Jabbok stream. Him. The Lord in the Old Testament. That's who was with them out there, in there. And they come out. Oh, something did get burned. The fire had no effect on their bodies. No burnt spots. The hair of their head, it wasn't singed. Their trousers weren't damaged. They didn't even have the smell of smoke on them. That is against all natural laws and rules. Right? So Nebuchadnezzar, he makes quite a change here. He said in verse 28, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego." That's the first sane thing he's ever said about spiritual matters. "Who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who put their trust in him, violating the king's command and yielded up their bodies so as not to serve or worship any god except their own God." What a witness to Nebuchadnezzar. So he makes this decree that if anybody says anything bad about the God of these three men, I'll tear them from limb to limb. That's literal. And I'll reduce their homes to rubbish. You haven't seen an absolute monarch till you've seen this guy, right? In action. I mean, you really haven't. Inasmuch as there is no other God who is able to deliver in this fashion. Well, then what should you do, Nebuchadnezzar? I think you ought to find out what his plan is. I think you ought to figure out what the plan of that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel is. You need to do some investigation. You know, he was impressed with Jeremiah. Jeremiah was the prophet on the ground when he came there. He'd heard about Jeremiah. Jeremiah was preaching the fifth cycle for the Jews. And when they drug them all out of the land, he gave Jeremiah a retirement pension. It was $1 million in our terms. You know, $1 million. That's small change to a guy like him. I know it doesn't register with you and I, maybe, but it's a small change. He had awfully deep pockets. And so Nebuchadnezzar has another vision. that Daniel has to interpret. And that's in chapter 4. So Nebuchadnezzar sends out a circular thing. You know, you can't text people. You can't mail stuff like that. But they can disseminate information through agents out there. And he gives tribute to the God of Daniel here. He's beginning to soften up, but he's still full of himself. He's still, I'm Nebuchadnezzar. I built this kingdom. I did it. Even though he acknowledges the God of them, he hasn't come full circle yet. So what happens was, Nebuchadnezzar tells on himself. That had to be a big step. He said, he sends this circular out and informs people, this news item, he sends it all through his kingdom. I was flourishing at ease in my house, and my palace, chapter 4:4. I saw a dream. I was really kicking back and relaxing and enjoying my abundant achievements. And I saw a dream, and it frightened me. It was a nightmare. So I called all the wise men in to interpret this dream. I related the dream to them. And I related, but they could not make known its interpretation. Probably because, in part at least, it didn't look good, the dream, for Nebuchadnezzar. And they don't want to say anything to him that is a negative, right? Because they're sycophants. You know what that word means. They might give advice on something, but they're not going to criticize him. Because he can go off on you in a minute. So he sees this vision of this tree in the midst of the earth. It was great. Now this is a vision, okay, people? It's a vision. The tree symbolizes something. It reached to the sky. It was visible to the ends of the whole earth, flat earth. It was visible. Anywhere you look, you could see this tree. This must have been a heck of an experience to have seen something like this. Its foliage was beautiful. It had food. The beasts of the earth found shade in it. The birds dwelt in its branches, and all living creatures fed themselves from it. This is just this tree, one single tree. And I was looking at it, and an angelic watcher, a holy one, descended from heaven. He shouted out and spoke as follows: chop down the tree, cut off all the branches, strip its foliage and scatter its fruit, because let the beast free from it and the birds from its branches. Just leave the stump. Just leave the stump. Don't touch the stump. And that, but of course, beneath that's all the root system. Just leave the stump. And put a band of iron around the stump in the new grass of the field. And let him, it shifts from the tree, and let him be drenched with the dew of heaven. And let him share with the beasts in the grass of the earth. Let his mind be changed from that of a man. And let his beast mind be given to him. And let 7 periods of time pass over him. Does that mean 7 weeks? 49 days? This sentence is by the decree of angelic watchers. That's an interesting. What's an angelic watcher? Observers. And this is a decision of the command of the holy ones, in order that the living may know that the Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind and bestows on it whom he wishes, and sets over it the lowliest of men. He said, this is the dream I had. And none of the wise men could make it known to me, make any sense out of it. So, Daniel is brought in, of course. His Babylonian name is Belshazzar. I had that broken down in my notes as to what that signified. Some deity and something within the system. He was appalled for a while. The dream wasn't pleasant to Daniel either. He was appalled because he knew it meant some negative thing was coming upon Nebuchadnezzar's head. He knew it. He liked Nebuchadnezzar. He saw something in him. He knew this man had something there beneath that hard exterior. He knew there was something more there than just another monarch full of himself. He was appalled. When Daniel was brought into Nebuchadnezzar, he could see it on his face. He was troubled. And he reassures him. He says, "Don't let the dream or its interpretation alarm you. My Lord, if only the dream applied to those who hate you and its interpretation to your adversaries." He says, "But it applies to you." So a long story short is, and again, keep the background in mind. Nebuchadnezzar tells on himself. He gives this long extended story and he sends it all over to his kingdom that his subjects may know what happened to him. He tells him, "This tree and all of it, it is you, O king. You epitomize the Babylonian Empire. Yeah, it's made up of a lot of people and a lot of things, but you epitomize it. You're the driving force that made this come together." And so it basically tells him that you're going to be taken out of circulation for a limited period of time. And that you're going Daniel gives him some advice. It's it's a shot in the dark. It's like, okay, king, may you cease from your sins and do good and show mercy to the poor, and may your prosperity be prolonged. But Daniel, you can't change this. I know you like the guy. Hey, he liked the guy. He saw something in him. God put him in the periphery of this most powerful man for a reason. More than one reason, but he put him there. 12 months after the dream, 1 year exactly, Nebuchadnezzar was back to his old STA habit of extreme pride. Pride of achievement. It was an ordinary night. He was walking on the wall of Babylon. And he's saying to himself, "Is this not Babylon the Great, which I myself have built as a royal residence for by the might of my power and for the glory of my majesty?" While the word was in his mouth, a voice came from heaven saying, "King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is declared, sovereignty has been removed from you." Boom. This quick. You're taken out of circulation. And you'll be driven away from mankind. Even worse. And your dwelling place will be with the beasts of the field. You will be given grass to eat like cattle, and 7 periods of time will pass over you until you recognize the Most High is the ruler over the realm of mankind. Until you get that and you get it fixed in your head, your arrogant head, you're going to suffer a mental disorder. It's called in the institutions, boanthropy. I remember back in South Dakota, they would tell stories about some of these guys up in the VA who thought they were certain kinds of animals, a rabbit or something. I was just a kid. I never went to check it out. But there are psychological disorders. So he identifies with cattle. He was driven away from mankind. He was taken out of the civil society and put out in the pasture fields. You know why? Because the ancients realized that if you came under a mental disorder of this, the gods must be against you and you're under a curse, and they didn't put you in a nice institution to rehabilitate you or give you drugs or something. They just put you out there to die and live. So for seven periods of time, he's out there with the cattle and identifies with the cattle. He wakes up in the morning with dew all over him. He eats grass. And so he was driven away. He also suffered an endocrine disorder. He began eating grass like cattle. Verse 33, his body was drenched with dew until his hair had grown like eagle's feathers. What? And his nails like bird's claws. Something went haywire in his system. And it's like, you know, some kind of like some horror movie. He's got these big long nails. All crude looking. And hair and weird stuff is coming out of his body. He'd fit right in with some of these people out here. Just kidding. But after this time, he raised his eyes toward heaven. In other words, he finally broke his will and his arrogance. And I blessed the Most High and praised Him and honored Him who lives forever. His dominion is everlasting. His kingdom is from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are accounted as nothing, but He does according to His will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. And no one can ward off His hand or say to Him, "What have you done?" You can say it, but it has no effect. It's just hot air. He says, "My reason returned." It's succinctly so. He says, "My reason returned to me." His health returned to him. He no longer had this weird werewolf. I don't know what it was. Hair like feathers. You can imagine that one. And he restored. And I came back to his kingdom, and everything was restored to him. His counselors, his nobles, they sought me out. I was reestablished in my sovereignty. And I exalt and honor the King of heaven, for all his works are true and his ways are just. And he is able to humble those who walk in pride. Nebuchadnezzar, I'm a classic example. I am a first-rate example of this, what he is able to do. In his case, the humbling part turned positive for him for time and eternity. And so he had a period of time until he passed, died, naturally. And then this awful guy takes over in his place, and the Babylonian Empire goes down. And Daniel survives. And that's the story of the handwriting on the wall deal. All right, our time's up. I went over a little bit. We'll come back. Hang on to your notes. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for this day, an opportunity to be encouraged by the example of these believers who stood fast in their niche in Christ's name. Amen.